Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line, Ben Golliver. What's up, man?
Not too much, Andrew. I need to make an official decree right off the top. There's going to be a cessation, a suspension, an end to all whining about competitive balance. We've been doing way too much of that lately. For the next 7 to 10 days, maybe 14 days, we are only going to talk about the greatness of this NBA Finals matchup. And it is a great matchup. I'm so excited for it. I'm in the Bay Area, ready to get started for game one. Can you indulge me for just a minute?
Look, I'm going to do my best to indulge you for the next 60 minutes. So yeah, let's get off on the right foot. I'm just going to let you roll with it. You already wrote 23 reasons to be excited for this series, which is amazing to me because I can think of maybe three reasons that I'm excited. But just do your thing, man. The floor is yours.
And that was the preview to my real preview, which dropped today.
I know. You wrote two previews for this series.
Listen, I don't know if you heard, Steph Curry said it was disrespectful of the media members to just assume that Golden State and Cleveland would get into the finals, you know, basically shortchanging the Warriors and Cavaliers in his eyes for just penciling them into this finals. And I started to think on that. And my first reaction, I think, was the same as most people's first reaction, which was to kind of blanch, be like, really? Dude, come on. You guys are way over the top in terms of your talent. Of course, you should be here. But then I started to think, the disrespectful aspect to our media coverage has been the lack of credit that we've given to their front offices in terms of building these teams. There are 7 All-Stars in this NBA Finals, first time in more than 3 decades that that's happened. And when you go back and look how all of those All-Stars came to be at this same point at the same time, it's crazy. LeBron James, one of the top 3 players in NBA history, left South Beach to go to Ohio in an unprecedented move that no one would ever do. Kyrie Irving's only in Cleveland because of an unprotected #1 overall pick. Kevin Love's only there because of a blockbuster trade involving 2 #1 picks. Steph Curry's only there thanks to Minnesota passing on him twice. Klay Thompson's only there because of the Sacramento Kings and their fetish for Jimmy Fredette. Draymond Green's there because of David Lee's unfortunate injury and Green's emergence as one of the greatest second round picks of all time. And then in the craziest turn of all of them, Kevin Durant's only there because he swallowed his pride or basically said, kiss off to the haters in a way that seemed unthinkable at this time last year. So we have 7 All-Stars. We've got multiple #1 picks. We've got a #2 pick. We've got 3 MVPs. We've got multiple all-NBA selections all in the same finals together simultaneously, and it's the 3rd time in a row that these 2 teams are about to take the floor together. Andrew, I know you are fired up now.
That's right, man. Kiss off to the haters. You said it. This series is here. We've been waiting for 12 months. I'm not as fired up as you, but I am excited for the first meaningful playoff basketball of the year. I feel like everything else has been prelude. And now once we get those 2 teams out there on Thursday night, there's definitely going to be a moment where I'm like, hey, like anything could happen. And this is going to truly reshape like NBA history. So I'm ready. I'm with you. I am just not quite as convinced that this is going to be all that dramatic. But we do have a lot of different mailbag questions that we should get
because
to.
People have sent in questions to openfloormail@gmail.com. Lots of good questions. And we saved all the Warriors and Cavs questions.
Well,
right?
Yes, we saved a bunch of the Warriors and Cavs question. And I'm most impressed with how many like big picture hardcore takes we got, whether it's LeBron versus MJ, Steph Curry being overrated. Let's see. We have...
I gave you my take. The front offices are both underrated for how they've brought this talent together. And not even just because of the stars, because of some of these role players too. I mean, yes, they've got built-in advantages, but guys like David West, Kyle Korver getting the chance to play meaningful finals minutes after being in the NBA for almost a decade
Dude,
and a half.
I can't
this
even handle
is
you.
Great.
You sound like a marketer for the NBA right now, and I respect it. You know, you're in the Bay, you're leaning into it. I love it. But
Well, I knew you were going to come on here with your wet blanket routine, okay? So
I'm in draft mode, all right? If you want to talk about De'Aaron Fox, Markelle Fultz, we can have a whole separate podcast where I'll be super fired up.
Well, guess what? The top 12 picks of this year's NBA draft could all play on the same team, and it would still not be as exciting as this NBA Finals. So let's shift into what matters, which is the here and now, not the future of these guys' potential, okay?
Okay. All right. We've got a lot of different questions to get to. The first one, like I said, a lot of big picture takes. My favorite question, though, was from Tim, who says, don't you feel like the Warriors-Cavs matchup is kind of like that famous scene from The Princess Bride where Wesley is in a sword fight with Inigo Montoya? Inigo is getting beaten like the Cavs were in the last month of the season, but then he smiles and says, I know something you don't know. I am not left-handed. Then he switches to his right hand and starts dominating, like when the Cavs flipped the switch in the playoffs. But then Wesley starts smiling and says, I know something you don't know. I am not left-handed either. And then he kicks Inigo's ass, which I think corresponds to the Warriors bringing out the Curry-Durant pick and roll in the finals. What say you, Ben?
I've never seen The Princess Bride. What's that movie?
Perfect. So basically, The Princess Bride, I hadn't seen it until a year ago, but it's a sword fight that involves a couple different twists. This is great podcasting. What do you think of the Curry Durant pick and roll, though, as the curveball for the Warriors?
Look, I don't even know if it has to come to that necessarily. I actually like the entire premise of this question of both these teams trying to one-up each other and the Warriors ultimately having like three extra aces up their sleeves. I think that's sort of where he was going with it. To me, their offense has been basically, unstoppable. And I think one of the major storylines for this series that I'm going to be pushing really hard in true marketer fashion, my pyramid scheme here for you, is that Steph Curry's being overlooked. Okay, mm-hmm. they don't have Delly to throw at him. They do have Kevin Durant to kind of keep defenses honest. Durant's been in real groove. And when you look at like the finals MVP odds, it's been Durant and LeBron kind of getting most of the attention there. And people are forgetting about Steph. Now, I understand Steph didn't really go completely nuts in 2015. Obviously, he was limited in 2016. Late in that series, didn't look great. Steph is grooving, okay? Steph looked quite good against the San Antonio Spurs in the Western Conference Finals. He's looked fantastic over the last, 6 weeks, and everybody loves to point out that 27-1 record over the last 28 games. Well, guess what that corresponds with? Steph taking his game to another level. So, to me, I think the ultimate ace here could wind up being Steph. As we all get distracted with this LeBron versus KD talk, he's lurking as the final swordsman in this analogy.
I'm with you. And you know what? Steph is due for a big finals. Like even in the year that they won, he didn't really get going. He maybe had one or two good games down the stretch of that series, but he struggled. And last year, obviously, he struggled. The struggles continued. It would be awesome to see him come out and just light the Cavs on fire. Of all the Warriors timelines where they win, that's the one that I'm rooting for the most.
Who is your finals MVP pick?
I'm glad you asked, because I actually, while you were talking, just pulled up the odds. If I had to pick, I think it will be Draymond Green, who is currently plus 750. I feel like the Warriors will win this series, and we're going to get down to the wire, and people aren't going to be sure whether to give it to Steph or KD, and then there's going to be like, the smart basketball take will be to say that, well, what actually won them the series was the Golden State defense, and then people are going to reward Draymond Green.
So sort of like the Iguodala or Kawhi Leonard.
A little bit.
Except less as LeBron stopper and more as just sort of like all-around defensive captain.
Yes, and sweet redemption for Draymond after the groin punching last year, so that would be an additional benefit to the Draymond MVP. But, I mean, who knows how you choose between KD and Steph?
I just have a feeling Steph might make that decision for us. I think that there could be something special in this series from him where he just puts up a couple 40s really light and we're all like, oh yeah, Steph won back-to-back MVPs not that long ago. There's a reason why this team looks unbelievable when he plays well.
Yeah. Well, listen, shout out to Tim for the Princess Bride analogy that you don't understand at all, but nothing would make me happier than Hubie Brown narrating the Princess Bride scene during game three of the finals. Let's make that happen, ABC. But we should move to the other side, from Golden State to Cleveland. A couple Cavs questions here. William asks, has any player benefited from the small ball movement more than LeBron James, considering the changes to defense and his skill as a player? So that's the other ace that I feel like the Cavs might have up their sleeves, is the LeBron at center lineup.
Well, you know, I've made this analogy before, but when the game goes small, it turns into sort of like early puberty AAU ball, right? Where you've got the best player on offense has the ball in his hands, and then he plays center on defense. And it's not anything like we've seen in the NBA, you know, until very recently, where guys like LeBron and Giannis are kind of capable of doing that. I think when you're Cleveland, the big question is how much big versus how much small do you play, right? And really their best big option is Tristan. I'm not sure how effective Channing Frye is going to be in this series. He's going to have trouble, I think, defensively finding matchups, and he played very poorly in Cleveland's loss to Golden State on Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And also, he got dumped from most of the series last year in the finals. I mean, he really didn't play down the stretch of that series when they were playing their best, right? So that leaves their center options basically as Tristan. Obviously, Tristan's going to play a lot of center. Or you've got Love, or you've got LeBron. And I think if Golden State's offense is really clicking, you know, Cleveland's counter is going to be, we have to just get as much shooting on the court as possible. And that could lead to a scenario where both teams have 5 3-point shooters on the court. Draymond and LeBron are playing center and everybody else is just spacing and shooting threes. That could be awesome. I mean, that could be really, really fun. Here's my big concern, though. This is going to be my moment of wet blanketness. I'm going to channel my Andrew Sharp here.
Uh-huh.
I am worried that the more shooters that you put on the court, the more this series goes small, the more likely it is that there's going to be one-sided games. You know, just one team happens to be shooting a lot better than the other. So we get some of those blowouts like we saw early in last year's finals, where it was like the first six games were all double-digit games. I'm a little bit nervous about that.
Yeah, it's definitely a possibility. I think that's one of the things that we've seen all playoffs, is that when teams are launching 35 threes a game or whatever the numbers are, that's when you get these high variance games, which it turns out it's not very entertaining to watch two teams trade 15 point wins. So hopefully we can avoid that. I do think the question is a good one, though, because LeBron in general, like just apart from this series, LeBron was always going to be dominant, and then going as the league has gone small, it's really played to his strengths, and I think probably helped him extend his reign a few extra years, and probably will continue to extend it over the next 3 or 4 years, because it just, everything he does well becomes so much more dangerous if he's playing it from the post in space.
Well, yeah, or he's just facing up guys with tons of room and multiple driving lanes to attack his defender from the perimeter. I mean, I always envisioned like late career LeBron as being that, you know, throw him down on the left block and let him post his guy up one-on-one in isolation. And eventually, you know, when the double comes, kind of kick out passes.
Right, but just pick teams apart.
It's not even necessarily going to have to be that simplistic anymore, because if you really do have full spacing, even if he loses half a step off the dribble, even if he looks a little bit slow, he still has the strength and kind of decision-making ability to take his guy to the basket, you know, from the perimeter, kind of facing up and still draw that extra help. So I think he's going to be able to do that now in this smaller ball era here for at least the next couple of years. And I think, you know, the late career LeBron, in terms of, you know, kind of reducing how much he has to do off the dribble or attacking guys, that can still come, you know, down the road, but it's going to be able to be delayed more than we expected. So yes, he's a huge beneficiary of the small ball era, as is, you know, any physical guy who can actually handle the ball and get to the basket.
Yeah, I'm with you. Next Cavs question here. Mako from Seattle asks, does Kyrie have a neck beard? I feel like this should be something to poke fun at more so than LeBron's hairline. And I included that for a couple of reasons. First of all, I Googled it and can confirm that Kyrie has a neck beard. I'm not really sure why anyone would poke fun at that, though. I think if anything, like a neck beard is kind of manly and is probably a good look for Kyrie. But
more importantly, we learned that he's inoculated against all criticism. I mean, the guy came out and said the earth was flat and he didn't even really take that much crap for it because he hit the game-winning shot in game 7 of the finals, one of the greatest shots in NBA history. So clearly he's still getting his pass. Is he going to burn that pass by not playing well in this NBA finals? I doubt it.
Well,
he looked pretty good. He looked pretty good against the Celtics in game 4, but I think he's still in that inoculated phase.
Yeah. Can you grow a neck beard?
Yeah. I try to keep it clean shaven, though. You know, I'm trying to channel 1950s America sometimes with my personal presentation.
Yes, that's certainly your brand, I think. I can't grow a neck beard. That's why I have no shots to fire at Kyrie, because every time I let my beard grow for like 4 or 5 days, it starts to get kind of messy. And to the people who can grow like a thick, lush neck beard, you know, live your best life. But we should talk about Kyrie in a basketball context, because I really do think that he's the most important player in this series. I think if he goes off, and he was also the difference down the stretch in 5, 6, and 7 last year. When he goes off, they really can sort of match the Warriors blow for blow. But if he's going to average 22 a game, that's not enough to hang with this Golden State team. And I know that's like kind of simplistic, so I feel guilty about reducing it to that, but I really think that when he's the version of the player who went nuts against Boston in game 4, like you said, like that makes the Cavs a whole different kind of scary.
Yeah, I guess I'd put it this way. I kind of see dueling X factors. One, you're right. Without great Kyrie, Cleveland's got no shot.
Right.
With great Kyrie, Cleveland's got a shot. I would also flip that, though, and I would say with great Klay, Golden State wins this series, period. You know, if he's going nuts, he's that extra tiebreaker. If Klay is on and actually playing the kind of basketball that we've come to expect from him in recent years, that he hasn't really shown that much in this postseason, the Warriors are going to be the NBA champions. I don't see any scenario where Klay is awesome and they don't win. Contrarily, any scenario where Cleveland pulls the upset here in this series involves Klay no-showing, basically, is how I see it.
Yeah. Well, and Klay hasn't really gotten rolling over the last month or so, you know? I mean,
He's been MIA and really kind of space cadet-y.
Yeah. I have faith in him, but that's a great point, is that, look, if he's in and out, and there are now trade rumors surrounding Klay, and, you know...
Let's not do that.
I'm just saying, like, people talk of anyone who's going to be available from that Golden State team, Klay is the first name that's mentioned. But yeah, I mean, I'm not saying he's going to get traded, but he does need to show up. That's a good point. So Rasmus from Denmark asks, I will always support LeBron, even though I bought the King jersey on my trip to the States 2 weeks before he left for the Cavs. Due to this switch and the rise of the Golden State Super Team plus KD, are the Warriors now the most hated team since the Big Three Heat?
That was like 2 years ago. I mean,
look, first of all, I like that Rasmus titled his email Danish Jersey Buying Idiot. That was solid. The answer, I mean, basically the question is, are the Warriors the most hated team in the NBA? And I mean, the answer is easy. Yes. Like absolutely. They're the most hated team since the Heat, but I mean,
they're so hated. They're so hated that LeBron is sparking Jordan comparisons and the world hasn't turned on him. I mean, that's what you would have expected 2 years ago, is like, oh, he's getting close to Jordan quick. Everybody tear down LeBron. On the contrary, people have rallied around LeBron, which is just shocking, and I never thought that would happen.
It's a good point. We have the Warriors to thank for that. But the other thing about the Warriors, and part of why I find them annoying, is that they're the clear villains, but I also don't think that they're good at playing the villain roles. Like, they're just not convincing enough. I mean, Steph is a genuinely great guy. Klay is hilarious. And it's like you said, he's a space cadet, which I respect. KD is weirdly sort of playing the victim anytime criticism gets brought up, and that is a whole other subject, but it's pretty annoying. And basically, if the whole team were more like Draymond, I could really get behind them and enjoy it. But instead, we're kind of in this no man's land where they're not that enjoyable, but they're also not that fun to root against.
Yeah, I can't argue with too much of what you just said there. Can we just pause this conversation, though?
Yeah.
To satisfy the haters? Imagine how awful it will be for Kevin Durant if the Warriors lose this series. I mean, seriously, he's been second to LeBron multiple times in MVP voting. The last 4 years of the SI Top 100, LeBron's been number one. Kevin's been number two. LeBron has completely dominated him in the regular season, 14-4 in head-to-head matchups. LeBron beat him in the 2012 finals, 4-1. LeBron's first team All-NBA this year, Kevin Durant's not. I mean, you just go back and look through the entire course of his career, LeBron has always had that edge, basically every single time. You know, Durant, as soon as he was able to surpass LeBron to win his first MVP award, LeBron finishes second. Then Durant immediately suffers, you know, 3 foot surgeries while LeBron has enjoyed perfect health throughout his career. It has got to be, and I didn't even mention LeBron number one pick in his year, Durant number two pick in his year. Like, it was 3 or 4 years ago, I believe 4 years ago now, that Kevin Durant told Lee Jenkins on the cover of Sports Illustrated, "I'm sick of being second." Well, it's been 4 more years of being second. And not only that, when you look at his decision last summer, and like you're saying, he has really been kind of playing the victim card. He's been trying to get out in front of every line of criticism that's been coming his way. I mean, it's almost like he's got a crisis communication staff on hand, preparing these counter talking points for him. No matter how you slice his decision last summer, he picked the team that gave him the best chance to beat LeBron, period. That's the team that he chose, right? Mm-hmm. He has to own that. If they still lose to LeBron, that is rough. That is really rough.
Yeah. First of all, I'm really enjoying you laying out the stakes with each one of these questions because it really is like this. That's what I love about the finals is that this is the stuff that can really sort of reshape the entire landscape. And it's kind of like a festival of takes for 2 weeks. And
this is where reputations are made and broken, Andrew.
Yeah, and that's not bullshit. I mean, I think a lot of people are like, oh, these are all just sort of like hot take talk radio stuff. But like, this is going to affect how we all talk about the league for like a long time. And so I'm into that. The one thing I don't buy into at all, though, there have been a lot of talk. There's been a lot of talk about KD versus LeBron. And I can't get into that, man. I just can't. This is not KD's team. It would be KD versus LeBron if it were the Thunder versus the Cavs or KD's Celtics versus the Cavs. The Warriors are Steph and Draymond's team. KD is a role player, and it's bullshit to make this like a toe-to-toe KD to LeBron situation.
You're bordering on hot with calling him a role player. I mean, he was sensational throughout the Western Conference
Finals. Was he really?
Yes, he was.
No.
He really was. Uh-uh. He was really good, Andrew.
I'm out on the idea that KD is somehow the most valuable warrior. If you took KD off the court.
Nobody said that, but he's not a role player.
I understand that, but if you take LeBron off the court, the Cavs are completely screwed. If you take KD off the court, the Warriors are still a 50-50 shot to win this.
I agree. I agree with you in the short term on that part, that there's no question who is more important to his team, but you can't call KD a role player. And when you are zooming out and looking at this from a historical standpoint, if KD and the Warriors win this title, it's KD's first ring. It's a crowning achievement. He gets to be part of the celebration. You're not going to not give him a ring. And we look back 20 years from now, the story will be KD got his first ring against LeBron. He had to change teams to do it, but that's how he did it. And it probably opens up this era for the Warriors where they win 2 or 3 more, right?
That's fine. But listen,
if they lose though, this is like a career defining loss for Kevin Durant. He jumped aboard Steph and Draymond's team, like you're saying, and it still failed. It still didn't work, right? I mean, this becomes the story of his career is he's never going to be able to get over LeBron. He couldn't do it. He took the shortcut. He took the easy way out. I'm not saying that's how I'm going to feel. That will be the brush he's painted with for a long time. And he's in denial about that right now. I mean, you could just tell with his Zen comments that he has said, oh, I made the right decision, win or lose. I mean, maybe for your personal happiness, but in terms of your basketball reputation, there's only one option here. You got to win it.
My only point is that it's not going to be all that triumphant if he breaks through and wins. This is not him beating LeBron. This is a Warriors like death machine beating LeBron. And yeah, I think framing it as him versus LeBron is pretty misleading, but we'll see.
Well, I hear what you're saying on that, but I do think he is going to be good enough by the time he retires where he's going to be in this ring counting conversation, right? So every ring is going to matter for him. He's not going to get the first and foremost credit on this. There's no doubt, especially in the short term.
Yeah.
But if this is the first of like four rings for him and he winds up being a top 15 player by the time he retires, you know, that's going to factor into like, where does he rank like Kevin Durant versus Larry Bird, right? Like that's going to be a discussion.
I think
he's got to start winning some rings before he can get into that mix.
I truly believe that if he wins this ring, people are going to attach a little asterisk to it saying, yeah, that was Steph and Draymond's team. And it's not going to be the same. It's not going to count for as much as, you know, LeBron's ring last year or LeBron's ring in 2012 when he beat OKC. And that's just the way it is.
I think those feelings are always the strongest in the immediate aftermath, and then they will eventually start to fade.
Okay. You might be right on that one. And that's definitely what I thought in October, but I think the closer we get to this series, the more it's like, wait a second. I mean, we watched the Warriors without KD, and they were just as good, and I think that's going to factor into the way some of this is perceived. But...
Well, it'll be funny if he starts to try to gun for that finals MVP. Like, let's say they're up by like 20 in game 4 or 5 or whatever, and, you know, they're trying to close it out. And all of a sudden, he just starts taking every shot to goose his number so he can get the finals MVP award.
Yeah.
That'll be funny.
We should talk about the other side of the stakes here, because this is part of what's most exciting to me. We got 5 different questions on LeBron versus MJ. The broadest one is probably from this one from JP. He says, what's your take on the ongoing debate over LeBron versus MJ? I'm going to let you start. What's your take on the LeBron MJ stuff?
Look, I have a million takes on this. I think we can do an entire podcast, and I think we should this summer, breaking it down in full. But I think this is my basic take.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan's still above him right now. There's no question. You're always going to see LeBron's blemishes in terms of, you know, getting swept his first finals, you know, losing the 2011 finals in weird fashion, getting blown off the court in the 2014 finals. I mean, MJ's aura of invincibility, the 6-0 finals record, is always going to be a tough standard when LeBron has those kinds of, you know, pretty obvious flaws on his resume.
Right.
However, to kind of counteract those flaws, LeBron is now in a position where he could have a couple big trump cards on Jordan. First of all, he beat a 73-win Warriors team last year. That's unbelievable.
That alone, last year's finals alone, made LeBron versus MJ a debate that can sustain us for the next 25 years. I think it's an open question as of last year's finals.
I think it was finally allowed to be asked after last year's finals. I rejected the question out of hand prior to that, but as a admitted kind of MJ stan, you know, growing up, you know, wearing his sneakers and his jerseys and all that stuff, I never even wanted to like let people put LeBron in that conversation until last year. It gets really interesting if he wins this one, because not only would last year he have beaten a team that was kind of a better team than any of Jordan's finals foes, but this year he would potentially beat the second and third best players in the league who teamed up to try to take him down, right? And when you look at the players that Jordan beat, it's an unreal list. Like in the finals alone, Magic Johnson, Clyde Drexler, Charles Barkley, Sean Kemp and Gary Payton, John Stockton, Karl Malone, those are some amazing players. But there was never a situation where the number 2 and 3 guy in the league were like, look, we got to figure this out. We have to go to the Hamptons and we got to put out a Players Tribune statement to figure out how we can spin the fact that we have to combine our talents like Captain Planet to take down LeBron James because he's that good, right?
Yeah.
And I think MJ defenders would say, it doesn't matter. There was no one who was even kind of in that level. Like when Jordan was at his prime, it didn't matter who number 2 and number 3 were because he was so far ahead of everybody. That's an interesting counter, and I'm open to that idea. But this, you know, if the Cavaliers win this finals, it puts LeBron, like I said, with that trump card of, last year I beat a 73-win team. That was a team that was better than any of Jordan's finals opponents by a lot. This year, he beats this star-studded, four All-Stars in the starting lineup team, super team, that was crafted with the sole intention of taking him down. I mean, there was just never a situation in Jordan's career where he faced that kind of an opponent.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, where I come down on it, I think just in terms of the sort of the ongoing discussion that the internet has been having for the last 3 weeks, and I guess various like talk shows, it's one of those things where it's definitely a debate, but right now the way it's talked about, it's one of those things where both sides annoy me.
You should have told me that before I went off for about 5 minutes.
No, you were good. I agree with literally everything you said, but it's sort of like the Jordan truthers are over the top in the way they dismiss LeBron, because LeBron really has reshaped the game on and off the court in a lot of the same way that Jordan did. And he's been, like you said, he's beaten better teams in the finals, and he's been just as dominant. And the gap between him and everybody else has been almost as large for like a decade now. But then the LeBron truthers come through and take it way too far. And they're like, all this Jordan nostalgia is ridiculous. Like, LeBron is the most complete player ever. Competition is better today. Like, LeBron's already the best of all time. And I hate that even more than I hate the Jordan people, because to your point earlier, nothing about Jordan has ever been that exaggerated. Like, if anything, I think people forget how unbelievable he was whenever we have these like debates. I mean, yes, like there was the six titles and the aura and the perfect narrative, but just statistically, like everything he did for 15 years was fucking ridiculous. And like, it's at a level that like we had never seen before, and honestly, I don't think we'll ever see again. And I think to me, that is just a little bit more impressive than what LeBron did. And I think that they'll be 1-2 in history, but MJ will always be sort of a cut above for me. And I say all that to say this, that if LeBron wins this series, I'm out. I'm off the Jordan bandwagon, and I am all in on LeBron as the greatest player of all time. And it's just that simple.
Well, guys, if you want to keep hearing this podcast in the future, you better be rooting for the Golden State Warriors.
You'll quit? You'll quit in protest?
I mean, more like disown you. You know, I don't know. I mean, it's that would be rough. Like, you could just record your half of the podcast. I can record my half. We don't even put them together. And let the editors make it happen. But I think, not to go super nerd here, but the longevity factor for LeBron is going to be huge this debate, especially for me. And that's something that kind of got crystallized when LeBron passed Jordan for the career playoff points during the Eastern Conference Finals, because LeBron's 32. And this guy could play for another 8 years, especially if he's angling for the LeBron Jr., Ken Griffey Jr. Combination, like I've been saying he should. I mean, that is a long, long time to be accumulating statistics. It's very likely he will retire top 3 points, top 3 assists all time for regular season. That's insane. And it's very possible that he's first in points and potentially second in assists if he can get past Jason Kidd. He's going to be way up on the rebounding numbers too, if you look in terms of, like, you know, non-centers. If he just continues to accumulate like he has, you know, for another 5 years, he's going to be way up there on that list too. At some point, when you are kind of matching like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's longevity and you have a case that your prime or your peak is as good as Michael Jordan's peak, that is a really tough combination to get around. And you know, that's when you start to go and look back at Jordan and say, well, he came into the league later because he went to college.
Right.
He took a couple of years off because he played baseball. He retired after the 98 finals because it seemed like the perfect walkaway moment. And those become a lot of things that you kind of have to excuse, you know, for Jordan. And this is never a position we've been in where we had to make excuses for Jordan. As somebody who's defended him forever, I never had to like even kind of concede these points. But if LeBron continues like this and his career goes on for 18, 19, 20 years, you have to make those concessions. Otherwise, it's overwhelming, right?
As you were saying that, I kept waiting for a but. I mean, because to be clear, you are like a closet full-on Jordan stan. So I am impressed that you are this open to the possibility of LeBron overtaking him. But yeah, We'll see. It's one of those things where it's hard to have this discussion because there is no clear answer, and we just have to kind of wait and see how the next 5 years play out. And
The last thing I should say real quick, though, if the Warriors do win, LeBron drops to 3-5 in his finals record, and all Jordan stands are, you know, popping champagne like they're the Miami Dolphins, or the perfect season Miami Dolphins. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like 6-0 and 3-5 has a different feel. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, it just kind of strikes you.
It does.
It's almost like, for some people, that's going to be the grand opening, grand closing of this debate.
Yeah, and maybe that's appropriate. Like, if LeBron goes down as the second best player of all time, that's not like a shot against him. You know, like, that is something that he should be proud of, and that's incredible. And like, it may be for the best and the most accurate way to render history that, like, yeah, nobody can touch Jordan, and LeBron is the clear number two. So.
I have one final thought. I know I keep doing this lately where I come up with, you know, trailing ideas.
Right.
For my entire writing career, I have always marveled at Michael Jordan's ability to show up consistently in the basketball reference player comparison finders. Like, when you go and say, okay, who's like had a stat line like Russell Westbrook, or who's done what James Harden has done, right? Inevitably, the answer is Jordan. Whether it's like points in a game or like points and assist combination or stat line across the board, he always shows up. We have gotten to that point with LeBron where when I was doing my finalist preview, I was like, God, LeBron's got some crazy postseason stats right now. It's like 32 plus points. I mean, he's racking up the assists, racking up the rebounds. I wonder who else has done this. Well, it was LeBron in 2009, the only other person who had done his stat line. So we are now at this point where even in the historical comparison of like the all-time greatest numbers ever, LeBron has joined the vintage, you know, where it's like you could talk about him as like 2009 LeBron, 2014 LeBron, 2017 LeBron, sort of like we did with 88 Jordan and 87 Jordan, 93 Jordan, whatever it might be. I can't say I ever thought someone was going to be able to put up that good of numbers that regularly to be in this position where he was kind of like being compared to himself almost as the only other person you could kind of put him in the conversation with. That's pretty nuts, man. And you got to give LeBron his due for that.
Yeah. And now flipping back to the Warriors, Jeremy says, could the Warriors beat the all-time Celtics with Bill Russell, Kevin Garnett, Larry Bird, John Havlicek, and Tiny Archibald? I'm glad that Tiny Archibald beat out Bob Cousy. I'm a Bob Cousy truther. All-time Lakers, Kareem, Powell. I don't know how Powell is the power forward for the all-time Lakers. Elgin Baylor, Kobe Bryant, Magic Johnson. And he named a couple other teams, like the all-time Sixers with Wilt Chamberlain, Charles Barkley, Julius Irving, Hal Greer, and deep Sixers cut there with Hal Greer and Iverson running point. My answer to this question, the Warriors versus the all-time version of all these different franchises, is I think the Warriors lose because there's still enough room to question them in the clutch. And if you're putting Hall of Famers all over the floor for some of these other teams, I really don't think that the Warriors can hang in close games. In close hypothetical alternate realities. And yeah, that's sort of where I come down on this.
Yeah, I come down on it completely depends on the era and the rules in which you're playing, right? And if you had an all-time Lakers team that was Magic, Kobe, Elgin Baylor, Shaq, and Kareem, and you put them at any point prior to like their true expansion of the three-point era, sorry, like that team is going to be really tough for Zaza Pachulia and Draymond and JaVale McGee to kind of keep up with, right? I mean, that's tough inside. But if we're looking at this as like the modern day rules, I mean, there's been a lot of evolution to get to this point, to like have these teams, the Warriors and the Cavaliers both. I mean, remember my favorite stat about Cleveland, they took more threes, they made more threes, and they hit a better percentage during the regular season than Golden State did. I mean, these guys have evolved too. They go very deep with shooters. You know, if you're playing by 2017 rules, it's very difficult to take any of these teams that are relying on guys from the 60s, 70s, and 80s. It's a completely different sport.
Yeah. Yeah. I just don't know. I mean, I think that's the one nagging question as we head into this series is like, if it's close at the very end, and I'm trying to bring this back away from like fake NBA 2K matchups, but if it's close at the very end, this team is still has all kinds of questions to answer. Would you agree with that?
Of course. And they haven't gotten their reps at all in the playoffs. I mean, they've barely played in clutch situations at all. They have the fewest clutch minutes of any team. If you go back basically to the All-Star break, fewest clutch minutes of any team during the postseason. So, yeah, I mean, that is, it's wide open. You can't know it because we just haven't seen it. And, you know, this is where the kind of the pressure and the LeBron thing comes into play for Durant.
Yeah.
Is he going to try to do too much? We've seen him try to do too much before, you know, overshooting late in games, over-relying on isolation late in games. Does wanting to take down LeBron, does wanting to prove it to everybody that he can do it, does wanting to exert himself, kind of over Steph Curry as a main option on offense, does that become an issue late in these games? Remember, it was a flashpoint during the regular season, Draymond screaming at him on the court. They kind of put that stuff to bed, you know, recently. But, you know, does that resurface? I mean, I think that's another way where if you're trying to envision a Warriors loss in this series, it's Klay doesn't show up, Iguodala is banged up, and Cleveland takes all the close games because they have LeBron and they know what they want to do late. And they also have Kyrie, who's proven to be a pretty good late game option.
Yeah, I miss the Draymond psychology. That was a highlight of like February 2017. And the other 100%. Thing I want to add that we don't know how the chemistry would be in the clutch with like the all-time Sixers, you know, like Allen Iverson working with Dr. J and Wilt, who knows who takes the shots in that scenario, and Kobe and Magic. I don't know if those two would work together as a backcourt. I don't know what it would be like with the Lakers. So maybe the Warriors have a better shot because some of these teams would be kind of dysfunctional too. But
hey, can I throw one question at you? And this is actually something that Rob wrote.
Okay.
And I was just thinking about it this morning. But Rob's premise was that if you look at the last seven teams that LeBron has faced in the finals, you know, starting with the Mavericks, going to the Thunder, then the Spurs, you know, and on.
Right.
He says each of those teams is a better team, basically, from year after year. Like the test has gotten continuously tougher for LeBron every single year. Through that run, I think that we can both agree that this is the toughest test he's faced, right?
Mm-hmm.
This Warriors team. Do you agree with that premise, though, that every single year has gotten tougher? Because I was thinking about this morning. I'm not totally sure I do.
Well, first of all, I saw it and my first reaction was like, damn, that's a great premise. I wish I had thought about that. So shout out to Rob. It was a great column.
That's why I'm bringing it
up,
because I had the exact same thought.
Yeah. And, but yeah, if you think it through, I don't know. I mean, 2007, that Spurs team was not nearly as good as the 2013 and 2014 version, in my view. So I agree with that. I do think that like the Dirk Mavericks in 2011 were probably better than the Thunder, and definitely tougher to beat than the Thunder were in 2012. That's the only hole in that whole sort of 7 year run.
Yeah. So I think that if you want to go from a talent perspective, there's a pretty strong argument that it's gotten tougher throughout the seven. But I think that the 2011 Mavericks were more ready to win that title than the 2012 Thunder were. And I think you could say the same thing about the 2014 Spurs compared to the 2015 Warriors. Now, the 2015 Warriors still pulled it off, but they were a little bit shaky there early in the series. And if you go back to that 2014 Spurs team, those guys were on a freaking mission. I mean, Tim Duncan, of all people, guaranteed they were going to, you know, get their revenge. And they completely dissected the Heat. I mean, yes, LeBron had the cramps. There was a few other kind of, extenuating circumstances in that series. But San Antonio was playing at a ridiculously high level throughout that series. So to me, I would almost say that the 2014 Spurs might have been a slightly tougher opponent than the 2015 Warriors. And I think that just from the experience and savvy factor, I would put the Mavericks over the Thunder. But I do think that the Warriors have gotten progressively more difficult, from the first year to the second year to now this third year.
No question.
And that should be like the leading story of this trilogy, right? Like this is like the ultimate battle. And we could have like three more of them over the next 3 years too. But
yeah,
this was the best one yet.
Yeah. And that 2014 Spurs win was a series that kind of felt anticlimactic to me at the time. Like when we sort of experienced, because the first two games of that series were really close and really good. And then it just turned into a blowout. And I was like, well, that's cool, I guess. But now looking back, that whole Spurs timeline was such a cool part of NBA history. And just the way they sort of fought back and just went about their business that year and then beat the crap out of the Heat was awesome. I think almost as much as like the Dirk in 2011 story. Like it was fantastic.
So I love that you just said that, because the 2014 Spurs, once the Warriors came along, my initial reaction was I got really sad because I was like, history is definitely going to forget these 2014 Spurs and how good they were.
Yeah.
But then I flipped it in my mind. I kind of like refocused and I was like, yes, but you can also now get up on your high horse 20 years from now and you'll be able to tell people for the rest of your life that like the most overlooked and underrated great team of all time was the 2014 Spurs. And then I kind of like smiled inside. I was like, oh, this is good. This is a good trump card. Yeah. I'm going to be able to play this in 2025.
It was good. Good for you, man. I can't wait. I can't wait till we're doing the podcast in 2025 and you remind people of Patty Mills in 2014. So Jordan says, this wasn't even a question. This was just sort of a statement about Durant. One of the few things that would irritate me with Kevin Durant in OKC was how he never stepped up and really asserted himself as a leader in OKC. Being the best player and the leader is two different things. We are always so quick to just put all the blame on Westbrook, and he does deserve some, but at no point in OKC did I ever consider KD a leader. And that's on him. I told you, man, the takes were coming from all corners this week. He adds, that's why I actually think the Warriors were good for him, because Durant is a superhuman talent on the court, but he has the mindset of a role player in terms of leadership. And that's fine with the Warriors because they have Draymond, Curry, and Kerr for that. What's your response?
You and him are just slandering.
Well, hold on. Let me be clear that I had not read the full question on that one, and now I feel bad for calling KD a role player. I just think that within the Warriors context, he's a tier below Curry and Draymond. But I'm not all the way on the Jordan bandwagon.
Well, I think what is really fascinating about this Warriors team, the KD part's only half of it. I think the Steph part is the other half of it, because if we look at this classic model of NBA leadership, it's Jordan punching his teammates, being the alpha trash talker, taking over late in every game, being that guy who basically scares his opponents off the court and scares his role players into stepping up and making shots when he does decide to pass, right? That's what kind of people have wanted from LeBron. That's what people expected from Kobe. I mean, people were always pushing Shaq to be a little bit, you know, have a harder edge, not be so goofy. That's why people always mock Dwight Howard, right? Like that is sort of the quintessential ideal of NBA leadership.
Mm-hmm.
What we're seeing with both Steph and KD, neither one of them is like that at all. They're both super competitive players, but they don't have that kind of personality. For KD, I do think it was helpful for him to not have to carry that burden by going to Golden State. But I think the remarkable thing is that Steph is somehow open to the idea of bringing him into the fold and then not jealous once, you know, he starts getting more shots early in the season. There's not this like, back and forth tension over whose team is it, who gets to have the ball. I mean, that stuff dissipated pretty quickly. They were able to strike a pretty good balance so far during this postseason. There really hasn't been a lot of finger pointing between the two of them. They kind of just carry themselves like, you know, pretty good friends. I wouldn't say like, you know, best friends forever or whatever, but like they're pretty jovial when they're together. You don't have a lot of media attention trying to drive a wedge between them. Like say when LeBron and Wade first, teamed up in Miami.
Yes.
It takes a special personality to be KD and say, I'm willing to team up. Maybe special is the wrong word, but it takes a unique personality to say, I'm willing to team up and swallow my pride and go join another team. It also takes a unique personality to say, I'm going to welcome this guy into the fold and not try to subjugate him.
Yes.
And I think Steph's done that.
That's true. And we should stick with Steph, because another question here from Elliot. He says, as a committed Steph Curry hater, I wonder, Does switching John Wall with Steph Curry bring the Wiz any closer to true contention? Short answer, very much so.
Yes, 100%.
He continues saying, does switching Curry with Kemba get the Hornets more firmly into the playoff mix? Does switching Curry with IT close the gap between the Celtics and the Cavs? Nope. Curry is great with his all-time collection of perfectly fitted teammates. But apart from that, overrated. Now, I want to add here, Elliot in his email also noted that he's a social worker in D.C., who's working to cure homelessness and listens to the pod as he drives around the city. So I say that to say that he's likely a good person. But that is a horrendous Steph Curry opinion. Curry would make the Wizards a lot better. Curry would make the Hornets so much more respectable. And I do think that if you switch Curry and Isaiah Thomas, the Celtics are significantly closer to the Cavs.
Oh, not even close. I mean, way better than they would be with IT. Yeah, I think I've always been kind of quietly in the camp that says Steph maybe get a little bit too much credit because Draymond is that perfect player to play alongside with him.
Yeah,
Draymond probably doesn't get quite enough credit. And I think I've been banging that drum for a couple of years. And I think he is now at the point where he is really getting that kind of credit.
Uh-huh.
But it's not like Steph is the most overrated player in NBA history, which is basically what this question. Well, I mean, Kemba Walker, which, come on, man.
By the way,
like, come on.
A lot of NBA players talk about him that way. You know, I mean, and the whole
jealousy is a mother, man.
I don't get it. I really don't get it. The Steph does not get enough credit around the league for how good he's been. And yes, Draymond is perfect, but he is like Scottie Pippen to Steph's Jordan. And I really do think that Steph is going to end up being a top 10 player of all time. Maybe. Well, I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know if I'd go that far, but I would say this. He hasn't answered those questions. Like, he hasn't had that crazy moment where it was just like, you know what? Everybody out there who doesn't want to give me my due.
Yes.
I mean, even in that first finals, he didn't quite have it. That's why Iguodala goes home with the finals MVP. Last year, I mean, definitely didn't have it. I mean, didn't look like himself at all in the finals. That only furthered those kinds of conversations. This is his opportunity to shut everybody up.
Yeah.
I mean, I really do think that all this talk we've had about LeBron versus Jordan, LeBron versus KD, this is really Steph's chance.
So, you know? let me rephrase what I just said as far as the top 10 is concerned. I think because once you're talking about greatest ever, like longevity, particularly with your criteria, longevity plays a big role, and there's all sorts of different factors to consider. But Steph at his peak is as good as any 10 players have ever been at their peak. So he's in that mix in my eyes. But your point is dead on. Like, we haven't seen him at his peak in the biggest games of his career. And that's the factor that I guess leaves just enough room for like a nation of haters to sort of second guess him.
Yeah, I mean, it is frustrating, you know, because part of the hate comes from Steph really changing the way strategy and the way the game is played.
Yeah.
And he really has had that impact. And when you go forward and think, you know, 10, 15 years, I think everybody, a lot of guards, at least from this era, look back to Iverson as sort of like their guy because he was the underdog. He had the spirit, kept the ball in his hands. I think there's going to be a nation of mini Steph Currys, 15, 20 years from now. And those guys are going to play a style that looks nothing like basketball looked in the 90s and the early 2000s. And you shouldn't blame Steph for that. He is really good at what he does. He's brought this game along, and it's been proven to work. I mean, these guys aren't accidentally winning 67, 73, 67. Like, that happened, you know?
Right. This has all happened on Steph Curry's watch. And your point about the kids is a good one, because the way I think about Steph Curry's popularity, because he is popular, like, I'm not saying that Steph doesn't get love, but he gets love from like the 11-year-olds of America and like moms. And I rarely hear other players, like Steph's peers, look at him and be like, that dude is incredible. Like, he is something else. And I mean, it's not like they don't give love to other guys. Like, every single player in the league, it seems like, was tweeting about Russ this year. And Steph just has never gotten that sort of concession from everybody else. And,
well, I think some of that's biography driven too.
Yeah.
You know, so I think there's a lot of players out there who can't relate to somebody whose dad was in the NBA, who, you know, was probably had his, you know, shooting coach begin at what, age two? You know, and I think that for some guys, they can't identify with Steph because in their mind, they made their entire careers happen, right? Like it was only them. They didn't have the help. And I think that's kind of a flawed premise. It sells Curry short in terms of how much work he put into his game and how that work continued into his pro career.
And yo,
you know, trying to get himself in a position where he could actually have a team and not, you know, battle with Monta Ellis for the ball.
Can we also add something? A lot of people talk about him being the son of an NBA player. He was the son of like an NBA role player. Like Del Curry was good. Del Curry was great on NBA Live 96. Like you could just nail threes all day with him on the Raptors. However, he was not, it's not like Del Curry was a Hall of Famer. And because Steph was born into his household, he was like predetermined to be great. Like, I think if anything, like Klay Thompson, you could make that case for more convincingly. But I mean, there's a reason Steph only wound up at Davidson.
Yeah, so just if you're keeping track, Andrew's role player list includes Del Curry and Kevin Durant.
God, I'm really not going to live that one down. You're going to keep that one going for all of the next 2 weeks.
No, I'm just messing with you. Hey, how are we doing on questions? I know we've got a podium, right?
Yes, we have. Well, a couple more questions here from Rob. He says, if the Warriors and Cavs meet in the finals and the series only goes 4 or 5 games, will this be the worst NBA playoffs of the past decade?
There's a shot. Look, bottom line, I'm all in on the hype. You heard me in the first 15 minutes of the podcast. I'm really, really excited. If this is a sweep, if Golden State just kind of like cuts LeBron off at the knees, that's going to be a kind of a tough pill to swallow, especially because we've been waiting and waiting and waiting. And not only because the early rounds were so quick, but because his break was pretty long in between, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I woke up on Saturday morning ready to go to game one. And then it was like, oh, you know, you've got 5 more days.
Yeah, the break is not helping things. I think by Thursday night, I will be excited. And by the way, I've pruned the mailbag of more negative questions. We got a lot of skepticism. I will only say that I do think that this is the worst NBA playoffs of the past decade. And I think a Warriors sweep would be cool, but the playoffs have been so lame that I think that the Cavs are going to win a game just to drag this out a little further and it'll become annoying. And so the gentleman sweep is the most annoying, lame outcome. And that's what we're going to get.
So basically what the Celtics did in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Exactly. There's going to be one bullshit Celtics win and we're just going to be like, all right, fine, whatever. But let's move to the podium. We have two questions here. The first one was not intended for the mailbag, but it's a PR pitch, which says, good morning, Mr. Golliver. With the Cavs and Warriors about to face off in the NBA Finals for the third straight year, many analysts are speculating about the psychological dynamics at play with the key players involved. But these,
including both the people on this podcast.
Yes, there's been a lot of amateur psychology on this podcast. But the emailer adds, these amateur attempts at psychoanalysis are just that, amateur. Here is insight from a true professional. Denise Schull, MA, is a neuroscience-based mental skills coach, the highly acclaimed author of Market Mind Games and Wall Street's real-life Wendy Rhodes from the hit show Billions. Nice. She has worked with hundreds of Wall Street hedge fund traders for almost 15 years and is now applying her proven mental skills coaching to athletes through her new company, Rethink Sports. And just an excerpt from an article that real-life Wendy Rhodes has written, Denise Schull. She says, speaking of doubt, LeBron willed the Cavs to their championship through the fear of letting Cleveland down once again. This year will be about him, not the fans. He intellectually thinks he's the greatest player ever, but emotionally, he isn't 100% convinced. If you look in his eyes and listen closely, you can deduce a fleeting flicker of doubt. This sounds like something written by Ben Golliver.
This is beautiful.
Yes. She says, maybe it's maturity, maybe it's smart risk management. Regardless, this mental state is an asset. Ultimately, The winner of this series will be determined by who is more skilled at channeling their most negative feelings. Do you agree? Look, are you in with the real life Wendy Rhodes? And have you seen Billions?
I haven't seen Billions. Let me just ask you though, like, this is bringing back Kobe's Muse Cage song, Hate, 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 Hate. Remember that?
Yeah.
Where like the whole thing was about channeling negative feelings. I mean, who's guilty of ripping off who here? That's my question. Like, who was first on this, like, it's all about the negativity angle? And also, my other take from this was, hasn't Golden State been running the other way as hard as possible, playing the joy card over and over and over again over the last couple of years? I wonder if you like showed this assessment to the Warriors, whether they would just like light it on fire, like just in disgust.
Yeah, they definitely have doubled down pretty hard on the like we have fun storyline for themselves. Although they also are now in every interview, they mention defense. And that's like the one thing that every Warrior comes back to. It's like, oh, no, it's not that we have like four Hall of Fame scorers. It's our defense, which is cool because it is like the defense is big. I will just say that as a diehard fan of the show Billions, which I've had friends make fun of me for, but I mean, cause it's like, it's kind of like a B plus show, but it sort of leans into its role as being ridiculous and it's just fantastic. I would love to read like a more extended breakdown from Wendy Rhodes of, both teams here. And so I read all of this in Wendy Rhodes' voice, and I'm in on the winner of this series being determined by channeling negative feelings.
Well, here's my thing. I'm not sure that LeBron is intellectually sure that he's the greatest player ever, and I definitely agree that emotionally he's not 100% convinced yet. So right. From that standpoint, I do think LeBron is still trying to prove things to himself. I think that's why he raises these questions, to kind of seek outside voices for either support or motivation. But do you really think LeBron takes the court and in his mind he's like, I'm better than Jordan right now, I had a better career than Mike right now? I'm not sure. I think this fleeting flicker of doubt is more like, you know, a full-on forest fire.
And I also, we should add that if the series winner is going to be determined by channeling negative feelings and doubts and turning those into positives, whatever, like Durant probably has a lot more doubt than LeBron coming into this series.
Oh yeah.
Apparently, 100%. There's room for improvement, and you can channel that. So if that's the game we're playing, I would pick KD in this one because he's also working with kind of a stacked deck.
Yeah, going back to this LeBron thing in terms of his fleeting flicker of doubt. I mean, you could hear it in his voice. I'm going to keep repeating that phrase because that's beautiful. You could hear it in his voice when he was talking about Jordan when he passed him for the career all-time postseason points. You know, he was talking about how he mimicked his whole style after Jordan, his basketball, you know, turnaround jump shots and the sleeves rolled over and, you know, all these different things that he kind of incorporated into his game. I mean, he still talked about Jordan as if Jordan was his idol. And I feel like if you're Jordan watching that, you're thinking this guy will never be better than me or never be greater than me because he looks up to me too much. Like, I have a mental edge if I was ever to play him one-on-one because he just wouldn't be able to keep it together against me. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering if LeBron ever does convince himself of this fact, if he does intellectually believe he is the greatest player ever and emotionally believes it, whether it's after this series or after some future moment, maybe when he retires, will all of that praise that he's kind of heaped on Jordan's feet, will that turn and will he come out and confidently declare, I'm the greatest of all time? That would melt the internet. Can you imagine if he wins this finals, gets finals MVP, goes to the podium and says, I'm the greatest player to ever live? That would be unreal.
All right, hold on. I saw that press conference from LeBron and came away thinking, man, LeBron is so much savvier now than he was like 5 or 6 years ago.
Oh, it was a front?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely, it was a front. Are you kidding me?
I bought in. I loved
it.
Okay, tell me more.
I saw him come out and say all that about Jordan and the sleeve and like all the little things that he did and the joke about going bald. Like, all of that was rehearsed. And it was smart, man, because look, if LeBron comes out now and says he's better than Jordan, every single reaction will be like, no, you're not. Are you kidding me? Like, and then we bring up the finals record and all that other BS. However, if he comes out and is like, yeah, man, I've just All my life, I've looked up to Michael Jordan. I'm just doing the best I can. That's where you leave room for a bunch of people to say, you know what? He actually is as good as Jordan right now. And I was impressed.
Man, I feel like a giant bass fish with a hook in my lip. He okey-doked me, Andrew. He got me.
He really did.
He wants me to make the case for him. He's playing chess, not checkers. I'm not sure that it worked, but can you ever see a scenario, though, in all seriousness, down the road, where, you know, kind of to borrow Denise's thought here, where 5 years from now, LeBron's just like, you know what? Bottom line, I rest my case. I'm the greatest. Could you ever see that happening?
No, I don't think he's ever going to need to say it. Like, if he goes out and wins this series, he's the greatest. That's all that really matters. And it will be determined by who is more skilled at channeling their most negative feelings.
Well, let's enjoy the last 2 months of this podcast then.
Yes.
All right. We got one more question.
No, let's wrap it there. Let's come back on Friday. We'll hit more around the league, and you will be live from the Bay Area, so we could just run through all of the X's and O's from game one. I feel like this pod was more of like a big picture discussion, and it'll be fun to talk some actual basketball, because we've had too much time off between the conference finals. For me, both of those series were over after two games, so it's going to be nice to watch like meaningful basketball again.
100%. And that's why I officially decreed there's no more negative talk about competitive balance. Because right now we are here on the brink of a super team showdown. It's going to be great. I'm fully convinced. I'm all in. If I get my heart broken because the Warriors are too good, I'll just have to live with it. I know who I'm going to talk to make me feel better. It will be you. Andrew, let's let them know. 5-star reviews on iTunes. We really appreciate it. We cracked 200. That was huge for us. Thanks, guys. We really appreciate that. Openfloormail@gmail.com. Send your game one questions. Send your historical questions. Send your mocking of my excitement and Andrew's negativity. Send in a list of role players, perhaps, your favorite role players from NBA history. Andrew, I will talk to you on Friday.
All right, man. Enjoy it out there. I'll talk to you soon.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.